This is Radio Influence.
Good evening, everyone. It is Friday, September 21st, 2018, and you are listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
No Longer Lonely.
And Beans. Hi, Frank.
Wow. How have you been? I haven't heard your voice in so long.
I haven't heard my voice in so long. It's been a lonely, lonely few weeks, I have to tell you.
And that's not a joke either, because I know you've been pretty much in exile with the family and just doing what you got to do. Everybody's been doing what they have to do. And we've barely even been texting.
No, yeah, I haven't been. It's legitimately like everyone's like, oh, enough already. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, it has been crazy. So I was in D.C. to meet with Brandon because I'm helping to plan the Walkaway March, which is going to be amazing. That's in October, last weekend of October. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, big extravaganza. You're going to be there, right?
Wait, what's the dates? It's going to be
October 26th through the 28th. The march is on the 27th.
That definitely has to happen. I wanted to go down there for the march that's not going to be there in November. So yeah, maybe this will give me another excuse to drag all the guys down. So yeah, like that. Let me work on that for sure.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be awesome. We've got a bunch of really cool speakers. Dinesh D'Souza will be speaking at the march.
Whoa!
Yeah, and we've also got Buzz Patterson, Pastor Burns. So we've got a bunch of people. We've got a lot more to announce, too. They'll be coming out in the coming days.
Wow, that's great. Dinesh.
Moving and shaking. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, Dinesh. Stepping up to the plate.
Hey, well, listen, it's just good to be back on. There's so much that's happened. And it's happening.
So. I know. So, yeah, after D.C., I got back and the next day fled my home for higher ground. So I haven't been back since. And I'm still not home. I'm not home until tomorrow. And did you hear this, Frank? That Florence supposedly is now broken off into another part, which is reforming into another hurricane in, like, the same spot.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know about this.
I've got 27-foot floodwaters, like, ravaging past my house. And now I've got to worry about it again.
Wow. No, I haven't heard about that. That sounds a little kooky. Then again, I have some ideas for guests on my show soon that I've been working on. I want to talk about things like geoengineering and other fun stuff. Because, you know, sometimes the weather is just really too weird for it to be natural in my mind. But then again, that's just me. That's just the way I think.
It's global warming, didn't you know?
It's global warming. It's global cooling. It's climate change. It's the catch-all phrases. I don't, you know, it's whatever.
None of that noise.
No, yeah. I just want to be left alone is all I want. But so now, where do you even want to start right now? Because this morning, actually just maybe less than a half hour ago, we had the president starting to tweet about how he's taken some advice from the DOJ, and he's listened to our allies in the foreign intelligence circles about how much should be redacted, unredacted, how much should be declassified from these FISA applications and from these text messages. How does this impact national security sources and methods when we're talking about a group of domestic people, domestic agents that are putting their names on something that is just has no weight, carries no water? I don't understand. Unless everybody's trying to cover their asses and everybody is cutting deals that we don't know about. I don't understand this.
It's frustrating. I'll read out the tweet for you guys. It's a two-part tweet from President Trump this morning at 10:35. He says, I met with the DOJ concerning the declassification of various unredacted documents. They agreed to release them, but stated that so doing may have a perceived negative impact on the Russia probe. Also, key allies called to ask not to release. Therefore, the inspector general has been asked to review these documents on an expedited basis. I believe he will move quickly on this and hopefully other things which he is looking at. In the end, I can always declassify if it proves necessary. Speed is very important to me and everyone. So basically, there was a little excerpt of an interview that Donald Trump did the other day where he mentions that foreign foreign allies are concerned about the release of some of this information. So that's led some people to speculate that the foreign allies are now cooperating and trying to untangle this. I think there's a couple things going on here, Frank. First of all, this annoys me. It really does.
I'm very annoyed.
I mean,
you know what I hate the most? I hate going live on a day like Monday and playing all the bells and whistles because we have confirmation that the order to declassify has been given and we know, all right, let's put all the cards on the table. I don't care. I just don't care how anybody else out there is damaged. I mean, what could be more damaging than Vault 7 for our intelligence circles and all that stuff? What could be more damaging than the Vault 7 release? We're going to see whose names is on a phony FISA application? That's going to hurt us more than that?
No, I mean, I agree with you 100%. I think that this, if you think, look at the timeline of when this announcement to redact, to release these docs was made. Feinstein comes out with her stupid Kavanaugh accuser thing, which I'm sorry to everyone out there. I just don't believe at all. I don't believe this woman at all. I'm just going to say it. And then all of a sudden, Trump's like, all right, well, we'll declassify then. Now it seems that the Ford thing is falling apart. And we have the Trump's tweet saying, okay, maybe we're just going to take a look at this again. Do you think that this was used as sort of a art of the deal negotiating tactic, which would really be unfortunate, in my opinion, if that were the case?
You're talking about bartering, not declassifying, to have this Ford thing go away?
Yeah, to let them just confirm Kavanaugh.
That's like trading gold for a used popsicle stick. God.
I missed you.
all you have to do is just walk right past these lunatics. I mean, the tactics are so bold-faced and nonsensical. If that is the case, I'd be very – that would not be a good deal. I don't know.
The timing on it just makes sense. I mean, to me, that's just my theory, of course, you know, being here in Florida trying to figure it out. But it just looks that way. And, you know, you had mentioned to me just a second ago, I don't know if you have it up in front of you, what Mitch McConnell just said.
Yeah, he said this. Where the hell is it now? Oh, great. I just had it up. Hold on a second. Here it is. Phil Mattingly just tweeted not too long ago. It's a quote from Mitch McConnell. He was speaking at the Values Voter Summit. Said, quote, President Trump has nominated a stunningly successful individual. You watch the fight, you watch the tactics, but here's what I want to tell you. In the very near future, Judge Kavanaugh will be on the United States Supreme Court. Now, Mitch McConnell has been, you know, speaking with a little bit more balls than he ever used to. I think somebody whipped him into shape. But aside from that, yeah, that sounds pretty encouraging to me, but I mean, this is a blip on the radar. We knew that they were going to throw the kitchen sink at no matter who was nominated by President Trump. And you know what? This is not a rah-rah, go Brett Kavanaugh type of a thing, because I wasn't even really hoping that he was the nominee. I like the nominees, like, you know, I like the floating of the names like Mike Lee. I liked Amy Barrett a lot more. So, but you know, he's not a bad pick. So it's not even just like about anything in particular. It's just we knew that this kitchen sink was going to be thrown at any nominee that was named. So why? I just hope it's not a barter.
I mean, you have to wonder, what did the Democrats and the Republicans know from internal polling about the midterm elections right now? What kind of a fine line are we walking? Because obviously the Democrats wanted to postpone this nomination as long as possible to try and get past the midterms. Well, what do they know that we don't know? And what do the Republicans know that we don't know? Is there some other kind of like juju being manipulated here behind? I mean, we have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. I do want to talk about, I know this has been spoken about ad nauseum now, but this is going to lead for me into Keith Ellison. And I don't know if you know much about what's going on with him.
Yeah, I do. I've been reading that.
So when basically Kavanaugh, you know, the story's falling apart at the seams. Now there's, again, the RNC tweeting out this audio recording of a Democratic operative saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to mess him up in July. I'll put that in the show notes for you people, that in July this conversation is happening. And people, you know, poor Karen Monahan is coming out and saying, Keith Ellison, I have him on tape literally abusing me and no one's paying attention. And she's releasing medical records and all kinds of stuff and nobody cares. But we've got this woman talking about a supposed party that happened God knows how many years ago before I was born, where she was supposedly assaulted by somebody she says was Kavanaugh and everyone else denies it was. And this woman has medical records here and nobody's paying any attention to
none.
It.
None whatsoever. Not only is he a current representative, but he was in the running to become DNC party chair. And I think isn't he currently scouting out his options as attorney general in Minnesota?
He sure is. Ugh. Yes, he is.
I mean, Minnesota's got real, real weird problems out there. There's some weird things taking root in Minnesota.
Like what?
There's a lot of, they have a lot of, like, that's an epicenter of a lot of resettlement as well. I think that is where another one of the first female Muslim candidate something had just won a race up there, and there's some weird background on that story as well, where she supposedly or allegedly married a sibling or a cousin of hers in order to get them citizenship in this country, and then, you know, divorced and whatever. So there's just some weird stories. Whenever I hear stories come out of Minnesota, it's always weird.
That's crazy. That's all Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. And then did you see the rumors coming out about Schumer?
No, I didn't hear this.
Oh, my. I read some stories about Chuck Schumer being intimately involved with one of his daughter's friends who apparently was impregnated, had to have an abortion, and then she ended up killing herself.
Really?
Yeah. And supposedly the daughter and the mother have come out on record about it.
I wonder if Chuck Schumer has ever looked himself in the mirror and recited the end speech from American Beauty to himself. When he's just looking himself in the mirror and he just recites the entire Kevin Spacey monologue.
Kevin Spacey, ugh.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a warped version of American Beauty. Only, you know, Chuck Schumer with that voice. Honey. Oh. Rub my feet.
I actually was on the Daily Caller before looking at an article about something we're going to be talking about in a minute. And there was a huge pop-up ad for Jim Carrey's new show, I'm Kidding.
Yeah.
Something like that.
No thanks.
I'm like, why? I don't, why? Why?
Yeah, what's he going to do? Is he going to go back goofy? He's going to start talking out of his ass again like Ace Ventura? Like he's going to, what is he going to do? None of these people can capture anything that they once had ever again. They're not funny anymore. We've seen them break down so many times, blurring the lines between reality and comedy when comedy became reality. So now you have to take comedy seriously. They've ruined their own craft. It's just, I don't understand why anybody is given these specials anymore, thinking that anyone outside of their group therapy, audiences, and that's all late night comedy is, and the talk shows and SNL. And I mean, you know, even just the shows that are supposed to be news shows, these anchors, it's all group therapy. Who do they think they're attracting?
I don't know. I guess some people, you know, still watch it, but it's interesting that you mentioned that because I have a good friend of mine. He did that film, A Child's Voice. I don't know if you were able to ever see it. It was about human trafficking and stuff. It was like a psychological thriller that he did. It was an indie film. And he did an interview about like the top 10 things as a director or a producer or whatever. What are your top 10 tips? And I watched it last night. It was really a 10 minute interview. And when you see the difference between somebody that actually cares about what they're doing and their craft versus what you see coming out of Hollywood nowadays, you like yearn for the days when you used to be able to watch good movies and shows. there's nothing available anymore.
I asked the question on my show maybe 2 weeks ago. When was the last time that you were able to, you and everybody in your life, almost everybody in your life, people who think and vote differently and all that stuff, when was the last time you can really say that you know that mostly everybody you know went to go see a summer blockbuster and everybody loved it for all the same reasons? I mean, when was the last time that happened? And when I say these things, like I criticize the late night comedy shows and SNL and the talk shows and all that stuff, it's not like saying, oh man, all this liberal stuff sucks and I love my Fox and I love my this and that. I don't watch anything anymore. I reach back for the classics. I just reach back to other things. You know, when people who I identified as, you know, Democrat or Republican, or even at a time when you'd have to actually do a little bit digging to see what a person, aligned themselves politically as, when it didn't even matter, you know. So that's just the whole thing here. It's not about rejecting one thing, rolling your eyes and going for, you know, the polar opposite of whatever it is on the political spectrum. I feel like there's nothing really to watch. You have to go back and dig, and you have to reconnect to a time when this stuff just wasn't that important.
When we actually had like real life, you mean?
Yeah, when culture was culture. When the politics and the culture were separate, for the most part, I know it's, you know, one thing. Last night we were looking at what was going on in the UK. When you were now over the last couple of weeks, have you heard about what the EU has been doing with all of their ideas to regulate the internet with that Article 11, Article 13 stuff?
No, but you know what? I want you to tell me about that. Just let's talk about Sunbasket real quick and then tell me all about that, because that's something that I was following closely earlier, and if there were changes, I'd like you and everyone else to know about it too. I mean,
absolutely, let's do it.
You to tell everybody else.
Go ahead.
So, Sunbasket has been rated the number one meal kit by leading publications, and it's no wonder why. They offer 18 weekly recipes with options for paleo, gluten free, Mediterranean, lean and clean, vegan, and more. But for me, what matters is that Sunbasket helps me eat healthier, simple as that. And it's so easy. Comes to your door, beautifully packaged. Food is delicious. Everything is separated. They work with the best farms and suppliers to bring you fresh, organic produce and responsibly raised meats and seafood. Everything is pre-measured, delivered to your door. You can get a healthy and delicious meal on the table in as little as 15 minutes. I made this beautiful, like, skewer of goodness with all kinds of, like, very farm-to-table fresh vegetables. And it comes with this beautiful, like, cotton frozen pad at the bottom that keeps everything nice and fresh. You guys can go to sunbasket.com/darktolight today to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/darktolight for $35 off. sunbasket.com/darktolight and support our sponsors who support our show.
I can't wait to, I'm going to go get my $35 off. Lauren and I were actually just talking about Sunbasket yesterday because the winter's coming up and we like to shop at all the local farmers markets, and you know, those go away in, I forget when.
Maybe late October.
Yeah, late October. They're gone until the next April or May up here. So we wanted to eat seasonally. We wanted to keep eating fresh and all that stuff. And we were looking for either local communes that actually put packages together for people. And I say, hey, listen, let's just jump right into this. So we'll be looking to that soon.
Super affordable, and you can pick everything yourself. So awesome.
All right.
Title 11, you say now? What is this we're talking about?
I'm trying to get this up last night, my last night's format. I don't know where that, what the hell this is, what's going on with it right now. I'm trying to get it up on Gmail. But pretty much a couple of weeks ago, we were looking at what was going on in the EU, some different types of legislation that's being passed. However, the tribunal out there in Belgium passes things for everybody else, whether it has to do with immigration, whether it has to do with the internet and the way that, you know, thoughts and the content is policed. What they've been doing is there's two articles within this one piece of legislation that started making ripples around the internet. Article 11 had to do with the way that hyperlinks were taxed, so that news organizations and all that stuff would make money off of, you know, what links were being featured and this and that. That in itself poses its own problem. But the real thing that got everybody up in arms was this Title 13, which pretty much was on the face of it, they say it was intellectual property rights protection. And it would essentially make most of the memes that everybody loves illegal, because memes are taken from either, you know, Shutterstock or any of these professionally done photos that show up in magazines, and they have really funny expressions, and they're used in certain ways to make jokes or to make commentary on what's going on in the world. So that is what got everybody up in arm. And all of a sudden, you're going to have these new mechanisms roving the internet to see what content is being used, pictures, which I thought was scary, because over here on our side of the pond in the U.S., Facebook has already announced certain types of ideas that are going to be put in place soon, like being able to scan every picture and every video that's uploaded to their platform to fact check it.
Oh, everybody needs to stop using Facebook after the Walkaway March. Everybody needs to stop using Facebook.
This
is insane. At this point, it's really starting to get crazy. Like, in terms of memes, how are they going to punish these people for using memes? What is it going to be, a fine, jail time?
Well, the way that it's really going to take effect, because obviously, what are you going to do? Are you the originator of the meme? It would be way too much to go after the meme makers. What they're going to do is they're going to put more of an impetus onto the shoulders of, you know, a little bit more of a reason for the platforms themselves, Google, Facebook, Twitter, to be able to police this stuff. I'm going to give you an example here. Listen to this. Here's another one. Now, I just went from the EU. That was legislation that was going to be that was already voted on and passed through one phase of it. I think that it has a second phase of voting that comes up in a couple of months or so. On the U.S. side of things, you have Facebook that is considering something like that, and then, well, also we know that Google is really letting their hair down in China and helping them create a digital prison in their own type of censored internet. So Google's having fun over there doing all the things they really would like to be doing over here. But over here, now here's another thing from the UK government. This came out yesterday from BuzzFeed, and this is something separate from what the EU is talking about. Headline: the UK government is planning to set up a regulator for the internet. Okay, it's preparing to establish a new internet regulator that would make tech firms liable for content published on their platforms and have the power to sanction companies that fail to take down illegal material and hate speech within hours.
Oh God!
So pretty much, they're not going to be. It's going to be too much to go after individual citizens, but they would be able to put pressure on these companies for not taking down what somebody out there defines as hate speech or illegal material within a certain time frame. Now, the reason why I bring this up off of our movie conversation is because it is being it is going to be overseen, and it's being drafted by the Home Office and Department for Digital, Culture, Media, and Sport. Due to be announced this winter, a new regulatory framework online for social harms would be created. But think about that department, the Department for Digital, Culture, Media, and Sport. Isn't it amazing how media and culture and sports, they all have a very, very important role in our society? And isn't it funny how the more that all of those things, media, culture, sports, whatever we're watching on the big screen or home on TV, once they become more permeated by toxic politics, isn't it amazing how the country just seems to unravel at the seams faster than we ever could any way else? So the culture has a huge part in everything that we do. Everything.
Yeah, and the fact that, I mean, what do the people over there have as a recourse? I mean, can you imagine James Woods? Let's take him for an example. He was just banned off of Twitter or suspended from Twitter. Did you know about that?
I did not know. When was this?
James Woods was, just this morning I got this tweet that James Woods was banned off of Twitter for a day or whatever for saying something ridiculously benign about liberals and Democrats, right? It was really nothing even big. I'm trying to find it right now. They said that he must delete his tweet because it could be looked at as interfering in an election.
What?
Twitter.
Interfering in an election?
Yes. Hold on. Let's see if we can find it. James Woods, Twitter. This is the message that he got from Twitter. Here we go. It says, this is a print screen. The deleted tweet, the tweet they want him to delete says, pretty scary that there is a distinct possibility this could be real. Not likely, but in this day and age of absolute liberal insanity, it's at least possible. Now, I don't know what the referenced video is inside of there, but this is supposedly the Twitter message that he got next to it. We received a report about one of your tweets, which includes text and imagery that has the potential to be misleading in a way that could impact an election. In order to use your account again, you'll need to log in and delete the tweets and links to it.
Because it could be used in a way to impact an election. What does that mean? That means that it could be used in a way to make people think anything other than what Rachel Maddow tells us to think. You know, if I don't even know what the hell the tweet was, but if anything that James Woods puts out there it should be taken down because it could impact an election, then what the hell do you do to the entire comments section below every damn time the president tweets something? Every time he tweets something, people have I guess their Twitter accounts are just programmed to be the first comments. What are we talking about here?
It's ridiculous. It's getting to the point where it's almost like we're an animal farm or like some kind of horrible, myopic, like crazy. It's just crazy. I mean, it's scary. 1984 squared and then quadrupled over it. It's nuts.
I want to punch people.
Well, I mean, we're not going to be able to do that anymore. Like there was this.
We're not going to be able to punch people anymore.
No, we're going to be, there was this movie I saw one time. It was like a really bad series on Netflix, I think a while ago I watched it. And there was this one person, like they live in this commune and everything is electronic and you get like a point system and you exercise for points. And then everything you do, you get awarded points for it. And then you can buy things with the points that you get and everything is fake. Like you're in this pod and the nature outside is basically like broadcast onto the walls. It's nothing's real. And you just use these internet points for everything. It's scary. We're getting there. It's just getting scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said before, with China really enjoying themselves over there. Oh, Google enjoying themselves there over there in China. I mean, I know Facebook is the one that was designing their own little citizen anonymous and unseen citizenship score in many ways. But once again, there's China. They're bumming off of all of their friends who don't need to apologize for being totalitarian commies, which I know is redundant. But that's what we're talking about here. They're bumming off of their friends in places like China who don't have to apologize for being totalitarians. Have you been watching all of the Project Veritas videos coming out lately?
Yes, I did do that yesterday.
Oh my God,
we have been basically infiltrated by a bunch of communist socialist nut jobs.
They're getting paid with taxpayer money to work on Democratic Socialists for America party platform operations on the job. That's what they're doing, and they're bragging about sharing sensitive material that they should not be able to receive. These people who are the equivalent of all of the college whiny liberal women tropes, okay, and the men who want to be women tropes. All of those people that you can't stand the most, that those stereotypes are actually the ones who are inside that we don't know about, who are subtly resisting and deflecting and working on other things and having a really cushy, secure job. That's the other thing that they all are bragging about, is the job security. Everybody else is scraping and clawing for a way to make something of themselves. Many people want to be able to do that independently so they can call themselves a boss, so they can contribute to their local communities by creating an opportunity for employment for people around them, to be able to actually contribute to something and leave something behind. These people are bragging about the inside track they have to influencing the direction a country goes in. And they also are able to sit back and say, we have nothing to lose. It's almost impossible to fire federal employees. I want to can entire departments when I hear shit like that. I want them all gone.
I know. And these people aren't even necessarily the most powerful folks inside, but they're doing their part to, quote, resist. And they all sound the same. All the girls sound the same. All the guys sound the same with their little entitled hoity-toity attitudes. You know, this, it's not even as though they're just, they have like a liberal ideology, like a classical liberal ideology that they're trying to, you know, forward. And what they're doing is wrong anyway, but you know what I'm saying? It's like these people don't, that form of government doesn't belong here, and they're brainwashing people into thinking it does. One of the biggest things that I've seen in like some of the walk away, because I've been doing a lot of work with them, so I've been doing a lot of research. One of the biggest things is that some of these people didn't even realize that what they were, you know, aspiring to create here in this country was socialism. Because they were brainwashed into thinking that it was just being progressive.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Before we go on with this, because I want to say a couple more things, I just want to bring in one more of our amazing sponsors, Blinkist.
Ooh.
Blinkist. If you're like me, Frank, the list of books you want to read or that people suggest you read is never ending and it's always expanding, but you just don't have the time to read them all. Our sponsor, Blinkist, has solved your long list of must reads once and for all. Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to their most impactful elements, so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all from your phone. With Blinkist, you'll expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere. I actually like to listen to Blinkist in the morning when I have my coffee and I'm kind of just futzing around before I listen to the podcast that I usually listen to, one of which is yours, Frank.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. The Blinkist library is actually massive, from timeless classics like Think and Grow Rich to current Amazon bestsellers. My personal recommendation is actually to either think out, and I've said this a couple times, Think and Grow Rich, or even The Art of War is on there, and it's really awesome to hear The Art of War in snippets, because they're basically standalone quotes that, like, they're just, I don't know if you guys have ever read that book, but I'm telling you, get on it.
I have Art of War. It sits by my it sits by my computer. I just skim through it every once in a while. I just have it because it, first of all, to read Art of War and to keep that in the back of your mind while watching everything that's happening right now. We're living through a war right now, and it's really important. My big question is, has Blinkist been able to distill the Stormy Daniels book?
That's a good question.
You'd probably be able to get through that in 2 minutes.
You know what? To be quite honest, I'd much rather play Mario Brothers than listen to that. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/darktolight to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/darktolight to start your free 7-day trial. You can cancel at any time. Blinkist.com/darktolight. Support Blinkist.
Yes, please do.
So, yeah, Stormy Daniels, why'd you do that to me, dude?
I don't know. It's just whatever.
You know, we're here, right? We're here in the hotel, and, like, there's it's been hectic because, you know, when you're with your kids at a hotel, it just gets crazy. I mean, you have to keep them occupied all the time. There's nowhere to really settle in. It just, but we just happened to be looking at the phone. My husband and I were scrolling through and the excerpt about the Mario reference was in there. And Will was like, my husband was like, is this really, really where we're at nowadays?
Mm-hmm.
That we have to talk about it's,
yeah,
Jesus,
this
disgusting.
No, this is where we're at. This is it.
Did you see the because it's been a while for us. Did you see the what's his name? The creepy porn lawyer's interview with Tucker?
I skimmed around. I really can't look at that idiot's face. I can't look at that idiot's face, Avenatti. I can't. So I skimmed around with that one, and I watch him. You know, I saw when I was actually at Optimum Online's their offices in Mamaroneck. I had to go and try to dispute something, and while I was in the office working on some correcting some things with our internet account over here at the studio, there he was with Stormy on The View, and I couldn't escape it. It was in the room. I turned my back to it, but I can hear his Fraggle Rock voice, and I just can't do it. But I've railed on him all week, so there's some great rants for you to catch up on if you haven't seen him.
Yeah, I definitely have to catch up on that stuff. I just, you know, you distracted me with Stormy. But I want to talk about, and I know you have a lot to add here, and you're going to help me out a lot here, Frank, with Papadopoulos.
Mm. He's another one I've been watching.
I know. There's been a lot going on. And I think, you know, I've seen people dig into this a little bit, but there's one level. They're staying like one little level above the surface on it. There's one level to go down. One more, and nobody's doing it. And I think I just want to throw this out there for people, see if they agree, and you too. So we learned, I've been following Simona, you know, the beautiful wife, right?
Oh, yeah, she's gorgeous.
She's beautiful. She's not as beautiful as Helga.
No, no. Helga is on another level.
If anybody hasn't caught Helga, go to my Twitter timeline and make sure you find her. I just saw it
this morning. This is a bombshell. This is a bombshell.
Helga?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
That's real intel right there.
It's severe stuff. She's actually, I found her. She was locked here in my hotel with me, an actual Russian, Helga. So Simona has been doing interviews now for like a year. And her original interview, she was basically saying like Papadopoulos is going to be this James Dean. You know, like this star, this amazing, you know, you guys are going to be so surprised to find out what happened with George Papadopoulos. He wasn't just a coffee boy. He's going to be key in this whole Russiagate scandal. You know, basically saying Trump's screwed. That was basically what she was doing. Fast forward, all the stuff happens with her and her interviews begin to change. And I've chronicled this along the way. So in April, she does an interview where she incredulously states that Papadopoulos is being looked at as an Israeli intelligence sort of guy for his connections to Israeli intelligence and nothing else, not for his Russian connections. So when she said that, I was like, Israeli? What is she talking about? You know, this was back in April. What was it? It was April. I'm on a Daily Caller app article right now.
I don't remember it. I mean, I know it's. I've heard this being brought up in the recent exchanges and all that stuff, but I don't remember the dates or.
Yeah, I think it was a while ago. It was before anything about Israel even was a glimmer in anyone's eye. Okay, so she says that, and I'm just like, that's really weird. I've never heard of Papadopoulos being connected to anything Israeli whatsoever. Right now, we learn back, you know, in his plea deal and his sentencing guidelines that he received $10,000 from some sort of an intelligence operative that wasn't Russian. And that's the money he's using to pay his bail or to pay his fine, right? And now he starts tweeting out all this stuff about what's going on with Israel and Downer and the girlfriend and all of this. Do you want to fill in here at all, Frank? Because
Well, pretty much. I mean, everything that he has been going out there and talking about, and the thing it gets, I would suggest that you listen to a little bit more of the interviews that he's been doing on Fox. Not because of the hosts or not because, you know, or anything. Actually, I guess because the host is a different type of host. They kind of just ask a question and they let him speak. what the most frustrating interview he's done has been on The View. And when he, because when he was there, there he's being asked questions and he's giving dynamite answers, but these women on The View are so out of their minds dedicated to the fact that there, or to the idea that there is no other way to look at the events of the last 3 years except that Donald Trump is a Russian operative and he was using Vladimir Putin's help to become the president. That's just it. So when he's answering these questions about, I think the what are the most damning, enlightening parts here. Number one, my theory that he was a patsy. It doesn't matter. Still, it does not matter. Patsy or plant. There's an idea that I might be willing to entertain now that he might have been a plant turned into a patsy, where a plant, yeah, a plan A did not, yep, go the way that it was, where he was out there because he's telling them, I had all of my contacts are in the Middle East, but here I am. I'm thinking I'm keeping Donald Trump's idea that there is a new way to approach a relationship with Russia that maybe can be a little bit less confrontational, that we can still lead through strength and we can make the world a safer place and we don't always have to be beating the war drums. So he says that just based on what the early campaign platform and the rhetoric was, he said, I thought it would be a good idea to have Donald Trump or anybody from the campaign just, you know, set up a, something like a photo op with President Putin to make it show that there's a new idea, a new direction we can walk in for our two nations, even though there is no doubt that there is like this adversarial tension between us since forever. So he first says that was his idea. I wanted to get a photo op, something that could be harped on in a public way, you know, not something that you're going to hide, but something that could be used to show how willing Donald Trump is to actually hit a reset button with Russia, unlike the one that failed miserably with Hillary Clinton. Now he goes and he says, and he talks about the six attempts, the six very, very public attempts to get the attention of the Russians and to get the attention of the Trump campaign and bring everybody together. And in no small way does he make it clear on a number of occasions that it was the Trump campaign that expressed no interest.
Yes, I know. I saw that. And, you know, to be honest, too, he doubles. That jives with every other public, like with the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence reporting, with the emails from within the campaign. That jives with everything. So I have no doubt that he's telling the truth on that.
Exactly. So now I'm like, okay, I believe all this. And he's telling it, and they can't actually hear what he's saying in this interview on The View because they're so insane. But he goes on to that. And then, of course, the next part is from that end, he pretty much said, oh, you know, it's a, what the hell's the point? Then he starts getting invitations. Then he starts getting invitations and he starts getting pushed around by an old firm that he worked for. And in comes Joseph Mifsud. Okay. And Mifsud, who has ties to Russia and ties to other foreign intelligence, circles and whatnot. Here it comes where if he was a plant in the beginning, he becomes a patsy because obviously the Trump campaign did not take the bait. And in comes Joseph Mifsud, who merely, just like Veselnitskaya, only had to be in Trump Tower for the optics to be so bad that it could be used in some kind of a narrative that Trump is trying to steal the election. Here comes Joseph Mifsud, who merely just had to let George Papadopoulos hear something that could not be unheard. And then, of course, boom, he is passed off into the hands of Alexander Downer and everybody else in that circle who then just starts, you know, it's once again flushing. We had information laundering that happened in a number of ways in the U.S. through the FBI and FISA and the search queries and all that. You have to take things, information that you got in an illegal way, and try to wash it back into the United States through rumors, through articles in foreign press. Anything that makes your needing to look into this situation a legitimate counterintelligence concern. On this side, It looks like the same exact thing, only it's more flimsy, because you have a man who tried very openly to get Trump to meet with Russians and was denied summarily six times. And then all of a sudden, this intelligence community connected professor, Joseph Mifsud, whispers sweet nothings into his ear. And then all of a sudden he's passed around, and they actually try to launder those rumors back into American intelligence circles through that means. That way, and he said that he was very suspicious of Mifsud. He was very suspicious of Downer because he didn't really have any kind of ties to him. He didn't know what the hell it was all about.
Well, yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, I'm just interrupting you because on Martha McCallum, did you see the interview he did yesterday on Martha McCallum's show?
No, what happened?
Oh, gosh. He basically says in that interview that he was approached by somebody in early April, way before he met Mifsud, that introduced them to the, quote, girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Who ended up being Downer's assistant. And then his tweets go on to say, over the past, like, 18 hours or so, the British and Australian governments were illegally spying on the Trump campaign by April 2016. Let that sink in. Senator Burr and Warner, in the interest of full transparency and my role in this investigation, it's absolutely critical that I detail my encounters with Charles Tawil, who is listed as a former State Department source who provided me with $10,000 in Israel. The British and Australian government's attempt to sabotage the Trump campaign is about to backfire in spectacular fashion. And then the last one, the day that British intelligence source Stefan Halper lured me to London so that British MI6 could spy on the campaign, the British Ministry of Foreign Affairs invited me to their offices to talk about Trump and what a threat him supporting Brexit was.
Hmm. Meanwhile, Obama making a last trip to the UK to warn against Brexit is... That was totally fine. That kind of influence was fine. But
oh, yeah.
You know, but going back to what you were just saying right there, it's huge stuff, because now it makes me think about what on earth could be part of the strategy right now with the not declassifying in such a wanton kind of a way.
Somebody could have flipped and is now working with us, like somebody inside of MI6, somebody inside of, you know, someone in Five Eyes or a bunch of people in Five Eyes could be saying, we'll provide you with this intelligence if you will let this go, or if you will hold this or redact that. You know what I'm saying? There could be some kind of wheeling and dealing going on with that for something bigger.
So you think that there might be somebody out there cutting a deal? Like, so we have James Comey and Mark Warner who put the kibosh on the limited immunity deal for Assange. So you have that whole deal, okay? You want to talk about sources and methods? James Comey pretty much said, you know what? I am willing to give up our intelligence community's most valued sources and methods to make sure that our Russian lie stays alive. You think that at some point somewhere in the world right now, other intelligence officials and other people within Five Eyes and our allies out there are making a similar deal, but they're actually pushing through it, where they're saying, we're going to give you our rats if you do not expose us like Vault 7 was exposed?
It, pretty much that's what could be happening here. A couple of things that fall in here, interestingly, before we take another quick break for a brand new sponsor that we've gotten. We're lucky. We're very blessed because of you guys out there, by the way. This is interesting, Frank. So listen to this. What you're saying is perfect. They could be flipping. Exactly. Think about the timeline of when that Five Eyes conference was back in April. I was talking about this with Finch the other day. Remember when James Comey went with Pompeo to the Five Eyes sort of conglomerate get together overseas in New Zealand?
I read about it recently, yes.
So James Comey went days early. Obama shortly followed him. They went to talk, and Pompeo was pissed because Comey went early. And this was right in April, right around the time that the Warner text messages and all that stuff were coming over. Remember also that Theresa May was the first person to come see Trump before he was like even inaugurated. I think she was here or a day after.
Hmm.
They're our biggest partner over there. So she, I think that's Britain, right? That's
yeah,
Theresa. Yeah. So she comes over here and she's like, basically like, dude, we're sorry. We didn't, we had no choice. We were, you know, cause they didn't, you know, they could have been, basically backed into a corner, and, or she might not have had the power to do what she wants to do. Aren't they like questioning her right now for psychological reasons? Le Pen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I think there are a bunch of figureheads over there, to be honest, Frank. It really seems like it.
Here, listen, all I care about is this. I don't want to feel like a complete dick. That's all I don't want to feel. I feel like we've already, every time we think that, okay, so here's a big one, you know, declassification yeah. across the board. It's like, good. Because really, I mean, we've seen the redacted versions of some of this stuff. We've seen portions of these text messages. I mean, and we've heard from people who've seen them all that say sources and methods are kept from this.
Listen, something just came out, like literally as we were talking just now.
Okay.
From Devin Nunes that plays into your point. Just in, Devin Nunes tells Fox News unredacted FISA documents will show Obama DOJ tried to use Carter Page FISA to obtain Trump campaign strategies.
I mean,
we need the documents, Frank. I'm with you. I feel it.
I can't stand taking new conciliatory positions on things that are less than what we want. I can't stand trying to find what the possible reason for the strategy change is. We're in a knife fight right now, and we're trying to be humble, and we're trying to be very be considerate of other people's feelings, the people who are trying to stab us in the throat. I don't get it. I don't get it, and I want balls.
I want balls too. Cojones. I want them. I want this stuff out there. There needs to be a nail hammered down here. We can't keep floating around like this.
Well, you know what it is? The big thing is the thing that I see the most out of all this is that why are we trying to preserve a system, any portion of a system that is not worth preserving?
Yep.
This is a...
No. I agree. We need to trash the whole thing and start over. Like, you know, the institutions, who gives a crap? The institutions failed and broke and they don't work anymore. And we need to replace them with people that can do an honorable job or fix them so that they can continue to exist the way they were intended to. I totally agree with you. It's frustrating as all get out. And these tweets this morning really bothered me a lot. Before we go to our little conclusion here, I just want to talk about this amazing. This is really cool, guys. This is Vivid Seats. I don't know if you've ever heard of
Vivid Seats.
Vivid Seats.
Mm.
We all love a night out, right?
I do.
I do too. Whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team, with Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price, or look for seats in the section and the row of your choice. And to make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. I like being able to pick where I sit.
Me too. There's going to be some games in Yankee Stadium this October. We're definitely going to get into the play-in game with the wild card, but I don't know. They just look. I don't
even want to talk about baseball. You know what I'm looking forward to in baseball?
What?
I am looking forward to, and if you're a real baseball fan, Frank, you'll get this. I want to see David Wright's last game.
Is he going to play?
He's going to play one final game and retire.
When is it going to be?
I think it's the 26th.
Mm. I like David Wright.
Listen, David Wright has been an exemplary example for children. He has been a role model. He was a diehard Met fan his entire life, got to wear the uniform, never got to play a World Series, had some horrible injuries and back stuff happened to him. He hasn't been able to play. He was trying to come back. He's just not going to be able to do it. But he just asked them if he could play just one last game as a Met before he retires. And he had like another $22 million left on his contract. If he retires, he doesn't get that money. Just as a show of good faith, the Mets said that they're going to pay him his last $22 million or whatever it is.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And they're going to retire his number.
I really hope that he gets a job within the organization. Wouldn't that be great if he eventually manages the Mets and you guys actually get somewhere?
Yes. Me and my husband were saying that the other day. I was like, I hope that David Wright ends up managing this team one day. And I think he will. He's not. Yeah. He loves it too much.
They should bring him on at first, at least as a hitting coach or something like that. Let him learn the ropes of the organization. And I would love to see that. I like when good people get good places. They need that.
No, I agree. Sorry to divert to baseball, but back to what you were saying, Frank, about getting these documents. Like, I think that people are at their wit's end. Like, there needs to be something official that finally puts the nail in the coffin for these people. If this just floats away to be never heard, or, you know what I mean? It can't happen that way. I don't think people are going to accept that. People are going to need to start getting louder. I will not accept no release of this stuff. I just won't.
No. I'm with you. It makes me sick to my stomach. It makes me sick to my stomach because, it's one thing if you're just a silent observer and you're going about your life and all that. But if you talk about this on a daily basis, especially if it's become a part of your format, it's getting me more and more pissed. And I'm becoming less and less willing to try to figure out what the strategy might be. We need to restore our republic. And to do that, we need to understand that most everything that government takes up as a day-to-day function is illegal, according to the supreme law of the land. Just because we've been doing things wrong for 150 years doesn't mean it's right. It's just got to stop. Everything has got to stop. And I hate, just like I hated being put in a position to have to defend Donald Trump every day, I would like to actually analyze his presidency a little bit more honestly and be willing to talk about what needs to change, what needs to get better and all that stuff. But it's just like this tidal wave of shit that we're trying to push back on. We're not even being allowed to talk about what is reality and why, because everything is the apocalypse. Everything is, we're standing on the edge of destruction, because this is what the people who want to regain control and cannot be on the outside of the sphere of influence for even 4 years without feeling like their lives are coming to an end. I want those people to be summarily defeated and chained down. I want them to be chained down and thrown into the Mariana Trench. That's what I want to happen here. That's what needs to be had. You know, the restoration of our republic means that all of these people who have left their filthy fingerprints all over everything, they will no longer be able to get to where they were on a national level, because there is going to be a court system that is adherent to law. There is going to be a Congress that is going to know what their limitations are on a federal level. If they want to go out and they want to turn their state or their municipalities or whatever the hell they want into socialist paradises, fine. If you have the money to do that, go ahead. But no longer are you allowed to rob from your neighboring states or take out loans against future generations of Americans. This is what I want. I want them to be chained down and allow their stupid ideas to play out locally, where they have no money to do it.
Or thrown in jail.
Oh, that too. I want them gone.
Excellent. Excellent. I can't even add anything to that. You're right. It's enough is enough already. Enough is enough. Enough is enough already. Really. I mean, when I saw that tweet come out from Trump saying he was going to declassify all that stuff, my heart basically jumped out of my chest. I'm like, it's going to be just like the memo. Remember the memo?
Yeah.
What a win that was for us.
Yep.
It really opened the door for so much. And I'm like, yes. Finally, not only that, they're redacting pieces of these text messages that talk about purchases of tables for conference rooms that cost too much because they're embarrassing. That there's, listen, Nunez is starting to speak. Oh, we need something. Guys, if you're listening, I doubt you are, but if you are, give us something, for God's sakes, please.
That'd be great. That'd be great if somebody was listening to us. This is part of the struggle. But you know, I have a it's called the Warriors' Folly. You ever hear the Warriors' Folly?
I have, actually, yes.
Carlos Castanedas. I know that he's got mixed reputation with people, and he kind of went off the deep end at the end. But this is a guy who was introduced to me by Rob, actually, and I was able to read into a few of his books. And I got to learn about certain things. This is a guy that went off to go learn with the shamans of South by Southwest in America, and the Mexican shamans, and just the medicine men of the and women of the ancient American worlds that knew a little bit more about the spirit, the human spirit, and our place in the universe. And I just love listening to this stuff and trying to take in what I can, because, man, are there lessons in all of this. And the recurring theme of the Warrior's Folly always pops up. And the folly is that here we are as humans on this planet, knowing that, A, we're not going to escape this place without facing death, that we know our limitations as far as our characters. We know what our temptations are. We know what we're driven to do. We know the good, the dark, the light. We know all of that stuff. And in spite of the hopelessness, the perceived hopelessness of it all, we continue to fight, and we continue to work, and we continue to just to make whatever kind of strides we can and prepare ourselves for whatever next levels there are. In the face of all of this adversity, just, and most of it spiritual, most of it just brewing inside of each of us as individuals, you know, not only just as a collective species. And I think that even, especially when we talk about things like this, where it might just be spinning our wheels in mud, but yet every day you get up and you just brush your teeth.
It burns inside you, yeah.
You've got to. You have to. And that's where we are.
I couldn't imagine anything else, Frank. It's so powerful, like this drive inside of me to get there. I mean, it's hard to explain. I'm sure you feel it too. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this. Yeah. Trust me.
Well, you know what the worst thing about this all is that the fight that we're fighting right now is the fight to free us up to go and make those bigger journeys in life. What the fight that we're fighting right now, the government control fight that we're having right now, this is a fight that has infected tens of millions of people who have kept them dependent on pretty much, you know, worldly mortal feeders. That's pretty much what it is. We're people who have been reduced to nothing but livestock who vote. That is exactly what we're fighting against right now. The fight that we're fighting every day and all this stuff, the fight against government is really the fight to unblock many, many types of spiritual impositions and hurdles that have been put in front of all of us. You know, it's just the first fight for humanity. I really do believe that. But that's all I have to say on that.
Well, I think that's a great way to end our first week back, Frank, after gosh knows how long now, what, 3 weeks it's been?
Oh, yeah.
I miss this, honestly. Like, I mean that. I'm not just saying that because, like, I really missed doing this for the 2 weeks that I haven't been doing it. And I think that today I just felt like I was just invigorated by being able to do the show with you again, and honestly. So thanks to everyone out there listening. Thanks to you, Frank. I'm sorry that we've had a little bit of a skip in our journey here, but we'll be back onto it now.
You're in exile from a storm.
I know. Don't apologize.
Don't apologize. It's all good. I felt that 1 week I did alone was all right. I could not do that 2 weeks in a row, though, because then it would just be quite frankly. So I'm glad that you're back, and I'm looking forward to next week already.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, guys, for listening to Dark to Light with Frank. Oh, oops. What? Who are you again?
With No Longer Lonely.
No Longer Lonely in Beans. You can listen to us on TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, the Google Play Store, and on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Hey, everybody, do me a favor. Welcome to Duffified Live. Three-time Naked and Afraid survivalist, Amber Hargrove.
You see what they go through and you're like, the question is it really real? Right. I mean, do they go to tents at nighttime? I mean, I've been asked that so many times. And no, are you kidding me? What I would give to sleep in a tent at nighttime? No. You have to experience every single worst case, like, possible situation out there. And it's entertaining, you know. Ecuador, our bed broke with the girls, with me, Lacey, right, and Giovanna on night one. We had no fire. It was pitch black. We had just our camera and night vision, and that was it. And when the bed breaks and you touch the ground and you can't see anything and everything's moving, what do you do?
So, yeah, no, seriously. What do you do?
I laughed. It shows yeah. us laughing. I'm like, I let Lacey build the bed, and I told her, I said, well, you know, we have a lot of weight together for three women. I said, you should kind of make it a little more sturdier. These are kind of like sticks you're using. We should get some logs. And right. she's like, I know what I'm doing. I'm like, okay. We get on the bed, like 20 minutes later, the whole thing busts. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're touching the ground. You could hear stuff move on the leaves. You can't feel everything. There was everywhere. It was raining on us. I mean, it was probably the worst experience I've ever had, even past my Iraq deployments overseas. So that was the first night, day one right there, worst experience of my life.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.